Hey guys, I am so excited for Ethos Training Systems to be the official sponsor for my podcast, Getting Zen with Gen Z. They are located at 314 West Institute Place, Chicago, and are Chicago's first sustainable strength, conditioning, and mobility group training facility. Their three main focuses are fat loss and conditioning, strength development, and injury prevention and mobility. Be sure to sign up for their new client promo at ethostrainingshy.com and make them your number one for all your training needs. Follow them on Instagram at ethostrainingshy for awesome tips and updates. Getting Zen with Gen Z. Empowering, motivating, and inspiring you to live your happiest, healthiest life. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Getting Zen with Gen Z. On today's episode, I wanted to bring in guest and executive director Laura Kinter of the non-for-profit Awakenings, which is in the Chicagoland area on Ravenswood. Their motto is See, Hear, and Heal. They've been open since 2010. And the mission of Awakenings is to make visible the artistic expression of survivors of sexual violence. I want to welcome you here today, Laura. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your schedule to come and join me.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to get out of the office and come down here.
Yes, I know. It's always a nice kind of field trip to make your way out and experience something new for the day.
Exactly.
But, you know, this is, we were talking about coming on here, how I heard about you guys, which was from one of my friends, Amy Landolt, who I've had on the podcast talking about acupuncture. She owns North Shore Acupuncture Center. But a lot of us kind of in the service and healing industries, you know, love to spread the word of other locations and non-for-profits and other people whose mission is to really help others, however that may be. And healing from, you know, an event such as sexual violence or rape or assault is something that is very important, you know, to many people. And we want to be able to spread that awareness and talk about, you know, this amazing facility, Awakenings. And the unique and creative touch you guys have on healing, which you will definitely talk about and we'll get into. But how long have you been with Awakenings?
I have been with Awakenings for almost exactly 4 years. So I came on in, gosh, what year is that? So 2015, I guess.
Okay, yeah.
In January. And it was just a job I had found online. And I went and visited this incredible gallery that just had such an emotional impact on me. And there was the founder and one part-time employee, and that was it. And it was kind of this gorgeous space with not a very big audience, not a ton going on. But so much potential. And I started out doing marketing and social media for them, just 10 hours a week.
Okay.
And slowly we just ballooned into this wonderful organization. And I've had the privilege of sort of seeing and guiding a lot of that growth. And it's been so wonderful to see the amount of public support that we've gotten over the past 4 years. But in 2018 in particular, I just feel like we have grown so exponentially that we're kind of shaken in our boots a little bit. But like I was saying right before this, it's all wonderful and exciting.
Yeah, that's a great problem to have when an organization or something you love and are so passionate about definitely grows and is able to help so many other people. What were you into? Was marketing kind of your career path prior?
Not at all. I went to Vassar College in New York, so it was a very small liberal arts college, and studied film and English, and basically graduated having all of these artistic aspirations of my own, and I think very quickly realized that I was better served on the administrative end of a lot of artists, so I began working with some filmmakers and kind of dabbling in that area, and realized that even though I didn't know what to call it, I was better. I wouldn't even say I was that good at marketing, but I was a good writer and I was a good storyteller and I knew how to get people excited about something. And
That
has really sort of guided me into the position I'm in today. I really cannot claim to have any marketing experience or anything like that. But
yeah, but how that's such a beautiful relationship that you kind of have where you're such an advocate for, you know, this artistic outlet. and still working with artists and people who are creative, but in a different sense of being able to use that as a tool to help mm-hmm. heal, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think, you know, even though my kind of career history before, limited career history before Awakenings, seemed kind of all across the board, I think storytelling is the one thing that is sort of the through line of what I care about. And I really, truly believe that listening to stories other people have to tell is the best education you could ever get. And I think I still, Awakenings is some of the most wonderful stories I've ever heard or
wow.
seen.
Wow. That's incredible. Well, tell us the story of Awakenings.
So Awakenings was founded in 2010 by Jean Cozier, our beloved founder. Mm-hmm. She actually lives not too far from here.
Nice.
So she has been working with survivor artists for a while. She actually started with a grant to survivor artists in the 90s named the Judith John Memorial Fund, which mm-hmm. was in honor of her cousin who passed away. And Judith and Jean had a really close relationship, and Judith's sort of dying wish to Jean was to help find a way for other survivors to heal through art. And
wow.
so Jean honored that by starting the grant fund and had actually housed it at a few different nonprofits or crisis centers in the mm-hmm. area, but then had accumulated such a large permanent collection of her own artwork, you know, through meeting these people, that she kind of needed some place to put it. And
needed a home, a space.
Yeah. And but not only that, people really didn't want to see it. You know, she would kind of take these exhibits places, want to hang them, and they would either say no or try to charge her money, or, you know, it would only be up for a couple days in a church, and, you know, it really wouldn't be getting the viewership because no one wanted to engage with this topic, mm-hmm. especially with art that is not so abstract.
Right.
So she really wanted to create a designated home for not just the survivors, but their artwork, so mm-hmm. that they felt like their work had a permanent place that would be visited by people and seen and appreciated like it should be.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So having this, she established this gallery mm-hmm. and it's always been in the same location.
Yes. Which we are quickly outgrowing because we have accumulated so much more art and so many more people who work with us, which is an amazing problem to have. But yes, we are still in the same space. We are on the corner of Irving Park and Ravenswood. There's
okay.
actually a strip of converted warehouse spaces up there mm-hmm. That are all rented out by artistic people, whether it's artist studios or artistic companies, which is a really wonderful community to be in. And we're right off the Irving Park Brown Line stop, and we're on the second floor if anyone ever wants to come visit.
Great. So basically, all the services, kind of walk us through exactly how people can come through and, you know, come to you guys and come to Awakenings and how they can start their healing journey and what services you guys have to kind of offer mm-hmm. to guide that.
So anyone can come visit the gallery, and oftentimes when survivors come to see it, it is a pretty emotional experience to mm-hmm. see artwork, you know, by people who have experienced something similar to them. So we have a large portion of our programming is workshop oriented, which means it's a little bit more private. You sign up ahead of time. It's usually facilitated by someone who is helping you through a particular art project or a writing exercise or movement work. We try to cover every artistic medium we can. There's usually one safe person on site, whether it is actually a therapist or myself or one of our other employees is 40-hour crisis trained in case someone is triggered or has an emotional mm-hmm. experience. So those programs, those events are kind of more safe and relaxing, and they encourage anyone to come in from any skill level, any background, to try these different things and see if it works for them. And if mm-hmm. it doesn't, that's okay. We also want to make sure no one feels like they have to be an artist or have to be a writer or have to be a performer
right.
before they come in and try this stuff. Because
yeah.
I mean, full disclosure, if when I sit down and participate sometimes, it looks like a 5-year-old made.
Well, yeah, and that's not really the point, you know, that it's going to be this beautiful finished piece of art or this perfect,
exactly.
you know, image. It's not so much about the artistry, but having a different outlet to be able to heal and express yourself.
Exactly.
And I love that you guys have different workshops where it might not be just painting, but also writing or any kind of creative outlet that you can think of to be able to express one's emotions,
mm-hmm.
really. So it's very individual.
It is. And we really try to make as many different healing modalities available as possible. We've actually in the past year, actually maybe more than a year, we have added some more holistic practices as well. We've hosted mm-hmm. Reiki clinics for survivors to come in and experience
Reiki. I'm a Reiki practitioner.
Oh,
I love that.
Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. I have been looking into getting attuned.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yes.
Yes.
Yep. Yep.
And I think that's a really wonderful opportunity for survivors to sort of get maybe the like meditation or relaxation effects of massage without necessarily being touched if they have touch and intimacy yes. issues. We also are adding, just coming up in a couple of weeks, a movement and energy workshop that's tied to the lunar cycle. So, you know, we're really trying
to... I love
it. I know, it's really, really fun. And I think there's a need there, which is really exciting for us to sort of build a network that is willing to meet that need.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other way, in addition to the workshops, is anyone can submit their art or their music or their writing to us at any times, because in addition to the workshops, we also have a lot of events that are more public facing. So uh-huh. we encourage people to come in and view the art and hear the music and read the writing. So we have open calls for a literary magazine and an online blog.
Oh,
we
wow.
have an open call for art submissions for our upcoming exhibits. And we also have a call open for performers to submit their work for our concert series. So even if, you know, you don't want to come to a workshop, you feel like you might be a little farther along in your healing process and feel mm-hmm. comfortable sharing your product with people,
you
then
could
we
submit
have,
something for
exactly.
that to be on display or actually come and perform or read.
Yes.
Which I can imagine that has to be such an experience, such
it
an
is.
Emotional experience to go through that and
it is
share with others what you went through.
Oh, yes. And we've tried really hard, thanks to our wonderful programming director, Jerry, has tried so hard to streamline our submission process to make sure that in that application, we mm-hmm. are making sure the submitters are taking care of themselves. You know, we actually had someone submit a piece of performance or a song, and they wrote in their application that it actually kind of put them into one of the worst places they've been in a long time. And so we had oh, wow. to sort of evaluate, you know, is it a good idea for us to bring this person into our space to perform this?
Mm-hmm.
And we decided not to, because, you know, we wanted to treat that person with the care and respect that they need, and they might not
of
be
course,
able to give themselves.
Because that's the ultimate goal.
Yes, yes. So it's a very complex process. I think the workshops, it's interesting because we have the ability to see and experience what they are going through mm-hmm. in our space, but with the submissions, there's some separation there. And the submissions are, that's the part of our programming that has skyrocketed. I mean,
wow.
people are just coming out of the woodwork with the stuff already created and sending it to us. And it's, again, a wonderful problem to have, but we're running out of
yeah,
places to
yeah,
put everything.
You probably need more people and more space.
Yes, yes.
But I can see that too, if people aren't necessarily as comfortable maybe being around others or being in that workshop setting
mm-hmm.
to be able to just have that option to just submit something that they've done by themselves at home, you know,
yes.
somewhere that they're comfortable to do that. And so how often, I guess, does the work go on display?
Interesting question. So we have, I would say, on an average of 2 to 3 art exhibit openings a year
mm-hmm.
That are often a few new artists. And then we usually supplement those artists with some pieces from Jean's permanent collection, because we still house
okay.
that at the gallery
yeah.
and we want to make sure those things are being circulated as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then we actually just this year added some big movable gallery walls to
oh.
increase our space, first
uh-huh.
of all, but also to see if we can start maybe doing smaller exhibit events for maybe one person, or, you know, if a bunch of people make a piece of art at a workshop, having the ability to actually hang that up kind of right away. So we're
yeah.
experimenting with some smaller art events, but I would say average about three opening exhibit openings a year.
So how long do you keep one exhibit up? Like, when could somebody come in, and what are your hours, I guess, too, or when the public can come in and view
we
all
are,
of the art?
So the exhibits, I would say, stay up for a couple months. That could change depending
mm-hmm.
on kind of our calendar. You know, if we have a big fundraiser coming up, we might want to put something new up right beforehand.
Definitely.
But generally there's a couple months so that people can actually see it. Our public hours are Tuesday to Friday, 10 to 4. And that's one of the reasons we keep it up for so long, because we don't have the capacity to open on weekends or nights yet. And,
mm-hmm.
and those are typically times when people would come to see a
would
gallery.
Would come and see some art. Yep, yep,
yes.
Yep, absolutely.
But we are open tons of evenings for our events. A lot of our events are in evenings and weekends, so that's also another good opportunity to see. Almost all of our programming is free. It's free to come in to see the gallery anytime. We're open. I would encourage, if you want to come visit, to give us a call so we can make some time available and give everybody a tour. But it's a really lovely space, and
I want to come see it.
Yeah,
yeah, we'll definitely make that happen for
yes.
sure. So when do you have? How do you guys, with that being free access? And I mean, that's amazing that it's free for the workshops and programs, right? For survivors to
mm-hmm.
be able to come in and participate. But as far as fundraising, what do you guys do for that?
A mix of lots of things. We have fundraising events. We have a very generous founder who helps us out a decent amount, and grant writing. And I think this has been kind of another really significant year of growth for us in that way, too, because mm-hmm. our founder has sort of decided to pull back a little bit so we can really diversify our fundraising.
Yeah.
And in the past, it's interesting because we thought it was, and it was in a lot of ways a blessing to not have the same need that a lot of arts organizations have. But at the same time, as much as we, you know, love our founder for the seed money she gave us, we're growing too fast. And in a lot of ways, I think not needing to fundraise sort of isolated us a little bit from the community that's out there, because, you know, the relationships we would be forming with donors and funders is really special. And that's how the word gets out there. So this past year was
absolutely
a real landmark for us in starting some of those relationships. And it's been so exciting to meet all these new people.
Well, it's a great thing to have somebody who is so passionate and wants to be able to help and fundraise and you know, basically give you guys those funds available. But you're so right. And I've been part of non-for-profits before. And it's that community connection that
exactly.
you want to have to make people feel like they're part of it and they're able to contribute.
Because mm-hmm.
I think people want to, you know, especially something that they're passionate about or they want to really find a way to help. They kind of feel like they're doing something to be able to add to that.
Yes, exactly. And especially with what's been going on in the past year with all of the public attention on sexual assault, I think mm-hmm. it's so easy for us to look at all these statistics and see all these newspaper headlines and just get so kind of despondent about the problem and think, okay, well, what can I do to change this? You know, I'm not going to assault anybody, so what else is there to mm-hmm. do? And there are tons of ways to actually have an impact. And I think one of the benefits of being still so small is that Awakenings actually is able to have a really close and personal relationships with all of the survivors we communicate with, whether it's someone coming in for a workshop, just visiting the gallery, or submitting a piece of writing. You know, we are kind of on the front lines helping them get their stories out there. And so anyone who is supporting us is so directly
connected and helping. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, even when we're not talking about fundraising, because I kind of hate, you know, monetizing healing, but just coming to see the art, I think there is something so impactful about seeing some of these paintings or sculptures or, you know, reading this, you know, these memoirs that makes different parts of your brain fire off than just mm-hmm. seeing a viral hashtag or just seeing a newspaper headline. You know, it really changes the way you think about it. And especially with visual art, I think it's kind of a window into what it's like to endure something like this that we really don't have access to otherwise.
Exactly. You know, you see all these, you know, we obviously talked about this too, with the Me Too movement, this has definitely been on the forefront for, you know, over the past year. But it's been going on for so long. And you know, if you haven't gone through it, which that's, you know, a great thing if you have not, but you're not really understanding the viewpoint or understanding what it's like to go through something like that. And to be able to share and hear somebody's story and understand and be compassionate and...
Or even just believe them.
And just believe... That's a very powerful statement right there, to believe them. You know, so many people... And to not, and that's got to be something that's very aggravating and makes people angry.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting too, because I think a lot of people see the Me Too movement as all positive, which it is very positive that it's kind of grown public awareness on this topic. And people are really starting to understand that sexual assault and sexual violence are an epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that demands so much from the survivors because they have to continue to fight to be believed and to be heard. And there's no one really supporting them in this process.
Uh-huh.
You know, I can't stand when people, you know, will just make one Facebook post about, you know, feeling like they're more woke, but they're not changing their practices. They're not doing anything to learn. They're not doing anything to support the people who are victims of this,
right.
of this cycle of oppression. And so there are ways to sort of break out of that and educate yourself. And I think one of the most basic things we can do is just to talk about this. And that's, you know, the cycle of oppression just feeds on shame and fear and guilt. And so the more we can have these conversations, even if it doesn't have to be this deep, you know, it can just be acknowledging something or calling out a friend or, you know, engaging with a small nonprofit in your neighborhood. And
exactly.
Saying like, hey, I went to this thing and this is what I think about it. What do you think?
Right.
That is how we break out
of this. You start that conversation, you talk about it, you spread that awareness. And that's something that I think is truly important. And, you know, as I was talking to you before, to the fact of myself being a jiu-jitsu athlete and competitor and instructing and teaching a women's program, you know, the topic of self-defense obviously comes up and is very mm-hmm. closely related to sexual assault. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being able to spread awareness and have that conversation, even though a lot of stuff we talk about is based on sport, but it's also learning the sport of jiu-jitsu. You're learning how to defend yourself. You're learning how to become empowered. You're mm-hmm. learning how to help other people. You're learning how to, you know, feel comfortable and confident if something did happen.
Yes.
You know, so I think being able to start those conversations and talk about it in any aspect of your life, you never know how you can touch somebody, you know, and have that positive impact mm-hmm. just by going to visit the gallery and starting a conversation with your family, your neighbors, exactly. anybody. And then to find out, you know, through coworkers or people that you know in your life that have gone through a similar situation, that conversation comes up and it's like, oh my gosh, I had no idea. And
people feel more
comfortable talking about it, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And when I got this job, you wouldn't even believe the people that would just start disclosing to me. You know, I would be in an Uber or at a restaurant mm-hmm. and just be like, oh, what do you do? Oh, this is what I do. And they'd be like, oh, this happened to me. This happened to my friend. This happened to my family. And they just feel, you can tell there's this, oh my gosh, someone I can talk to about
right.
this. And I wish there wasn't that stigma. You know what I mean? I wish it was just a more accepted, you know, topic of conversation. But mm-hmm. unfortunately, no one wants to engage with it and no one wants to acknowledge it. But I do think that's changing.
Well, I absolutely think so. And I think that, you know, as you made the statement before, it is positive having this Me Too movement. More people are bringing awareness and talking about it, but we have to do more than that. We have to continue it because this has gone on for so long without being talked about and discussed that we need to continue finding ways that we can help support these survivors because it has to be so incredibly difficult to talk about, you know, these stories and situations and mm-hmm. So brave of people to be able to share that, be it communicating through art. And that's what I love is this creative outlet that they have. They can express it in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Wow. That's incredible. Yeah. And that's got to be pretty intense for you guys as well.
Yes.
As the staff. Just
it is
because you want to be there and you want to help, you know, people who are coming in and help support them. But that has to be a huge, you know, emotional impact on yourself.
It is. It definitely took me a little longer than I like to realize that about mm-hmm. how it was affecting my mental health and my emotions. But I think what's really wonderful is that because of the work we do, it makes us so much more sensitive to our, you know, each
yeah.
other and our work environment, even though, you know, obviously it gets stressful and things get tense. And sometimes we hear a lot of really tough stories in one day, but
right.
I think we really do try to support one another and make sure, you know, like, hey, if you're having a rough day, if you just read a really difficult email, like go take a walk, go home for the day. You know,
yeah.
we really try to promote as much self-care as we possibly can. And I really, really value that. I've never seen that in any work environment I've been in before.
Well, it's important. And that's just the topic of communicating and talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're all going to have these feelings and emotions and that's completely normal and healthy. And we need to express them. And sometimes we need to take a step back and it's okay.
Exactly.
You know, you have to go through that healing for yourself because when we have that self-care, we can become strong for other people.
Exactly. Because, you know, if I come into work and I had a really rough couple days, I'm not going to be as compassionate as I could be to the people that we're trying to serve. So it totally is really important. And when we were trained for the crisis training, they actually mm-hmm. have, which I really appreciate, an entire kind of section at the end for, because anyone who works in this field is going to suffer from, you know, some sort of, you know, burnout.
Right. Absolutely.
And I think seeing that stated so directly was really, really powerful to hear, like, hey, you really need to take care of yourself, not just for you, but for these other people that you're here to help.
Exactly.
And I was like, oh God, you're right.
Well, yeah. I mean, to be able to do your job, you have to be, you know, good and healthy and strong. And mm-hmm. you have to understand how to take care of yourself and those emotions to be that support system mm-hmm. for other people. Because that's what you do is incredible. And you are really, people are coming to you and relying on you for that help and guidance. So, you know,
yeah,
it's important that we all take care of each other.
I do feel the need to say we are not therapists at Awakenings. We
right.
do work with a lot of therapists.
That was my next question.
Yes. Yeah. So I think that's really important to note because I think some people do get confused and think we are therapists. And mm-hmm. so that's why we were trained because, you know, people come in and tell us their stories, and I think kind of which we want to be able to receive and treat with
absolutely
care and respond, you know, correctly.
Yes,
to.
But you want to be able to know what to do in that situation and mm-hmm. to guide those people
exactly
in the proper format.
Yes,
you know. And so, do you guys have a therapist? I know you have therapists for different workshops, but do you have somebody there all the time?
No, we have close relationships with therapists for a couple reasons. So sometimes we have them involved with the workshops, mm-hmm. But mostly we just like to learn about their practices so that they can actually teach us how to be better at what we're doing, since we are not clinicians.
Right.
And also so that they understand that for any trauma clients that they might have, we are a resource for their clients as well.
Definitely.
Know? So they know us and they trust that our environment is safe for, you know, their mm-hmm. clients to come and try something. And I think that's really important too, because a lot of crisis centers have a limit of free counseling that survivors can get. And so maybe when they're kind of out of time there or ready to graduate to the next step mm-hmm. and kind of, you know, try new things, they can come to Awakenings and sit in a workshop or, you know, start to build a community in that way. And the therapist then knows that they're in good hands.
Right. It's a safe place for them to be. And also for you guys to be able to give that information and refer,
yes.
you know, people
exactly.
to other professionals that you know and trust.
Exactly. Yeah,
you know,
do.
And that they'd be in a good environment.
Mm-hmm. We've been collecting sort of a directory of trusted Awakenings therapists.
Well, but I can imagine that's what a lot of people would come to you guys as,
mm-hmm.
as a resource for that,
mm-hmm.
you know, a resource for healing and to be able to be creative, but also to where can I go if I really, you know, need some more help
or, yeah,
you know,
exactly.
need someone to talk to. So that's great that you brought up that point
yeah.
because, I mean, you guys are there doing a lot of things, you know, and as a great resource and helping guide the workshops and making all that kind of magic and healing happening. But people are going to come in and try and share their stories with you. And
we want them to.
And you want them to. But what was that training like that you guys had to take?
That training, so it's a state training.
Mm-hmm.
We actually took it with the Zachariah Center in Gurnee.
Oh,
actually,
yes.
Also the center in Skokie as well, which is where we were. It's a little closer.
My good friend was with the Zachariah Center, Stephanie Garrity.
Oh, my gosh. I know Stephanie.
Yes.
Hi, Stephanie.
Yeah.
That's so funny. So Jerry and I, our program director, we took it with them, and it's a 40-hour crisis training. So mm-hmm. they kind of take you through. We went one Saturday or every Saturday for, I think, 6 weeks.
Okay.
And they kind of take you through the history of the rape culture or rape mm-hmm. crisis movement. And then kind of you get a lot of definitions of, you know, the cycle of oppression and rape culture. And then you get really scientific about what is adult sexual assault? What is childhood sexual assault? What are the warning signs? What do you do to report, you know, disclosures? How do you, you know, handle all of those different things? And so it was really comprehensive. Actually, the reason people usually take that training is because they'll take it so that they can sign up to be an advocate for a crisis center.
Mm-hmm.
So you could be a legal advocate, you could be a medical advocate where you actually get dispatched to a hospital when
okay.
someone goes in.
I see.
Or a hotline, work on a hotline.
Mm-hmm.
But they were generous enough to give us 2 seats just as community partners. And I think there were a couple other people in our training cohort that were also just community partners. So people that work in the field or, you know, get enough disclosures from survivors or work with survivors enough mm-hmm. that information we really should have.
Yeah.
So they were so generous to let us do that. And we have a great relationship with them. And there are plenty of other places you can get that training. I know Resilience also offers it. That's another Chicago crisis center. And it is a lot of information. It's very heavy. It's a lot of work, but it's something that I really wish everyone could have because the amount of information and the amount of understanding I felt like I was enlightened. And this is coming from
absolutely.
Someone who had worked in this field for,
mm-hmm.
for almost 4 years at the time I was getting the training. So I thought I'd seen and heard it all. And then I was kind of like, oh my God, like this is
a whole new level.
This goes back, you know, this is part of the cultural like fabric of our history. And I just, you know, it's,
wow.
Yeah, it was really intense. I highly recommend it, but it is a huge commitment
mm-hmm.
and you need to make sure. I actually remember scheduling dinners with certain friends, with male friends actually, was very helpful right after the trainings were over, and I just yelled for like an hour just about all of the things I learned, and it felt so amazing because I had to unload that onto somebody, you know, and
right.
just but again, it was an amazing experience. I wouldn't
wow.
switch it for the world.
Yeah. That's how, I mean, just learning about that and be able to understand it and to have those that the tools and the education to help other people going through it, I think mm-hmm. is just incredible, and to be able to realize how and understand how this has gone on for such a long time, yes. unfortunately. But, you know, understanding that, I think, just helps equip you even more.
Exactly. And if you need some lighter resources on the topic, I can definitely mm-hmm. help you out with that.
Yes, yes.
I always want to share.
Do you guys rely on any volunteer help for people to come in?
Yes, we have. That's another very quickly growing, rapidly growing part of our family. Mm-hmm. So we have, I don't even know if I could give you a specific number. I feel like the volunteers that we have right now, we mostly use volunteers for events. So people just to help check people in, open the door, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of volunteers working on reading submissions for the literary magazine.
Just okay.
The
yeah.
amount,
to go through everything.
Yes. Which is a heavy ask for volunteers. Mm-hmm. So that these are people that we really know and trust and are trying to, you know, give them the appropriate amount to read, you know, so that they don't feel overwhelmed. We also have a visual art review committee. We have, I can't remember how many people that is either. I want to say about 7 or 8 people who help us look at all the artistic submissions and just give comments so that, you know, when we're choosing art to be exhibited, it's not just, you know, 2 staff members making that decision. It's kind of a wide variety of people that we know and trust, artists specifically in the community. We have anybody across the board, and what's really wonderful about it is people have come out of the woodwork to offer services in areas that we never could have guessed before. And, you know, we have this one wonderful volunteer who was helping us with the literary magazine, and she actually knows graphic design and offered to sort of help us lay out the magazine in
That's
a way
amazing.
That we've never really had the capacity mm-hmm. to do in-house. And so things like that, when people come to us and say, hey, we noticed that this is something that I'm really good at and you could use, can I do this for you? And we're like, yes.
Absolutely. Well, when they have that, you know, that background and those tools to be able to help you guys in that yes. aspect, that's amazing.
It's perfect.
Because you guys can't, you know, and I've learned this just through owning my own business, you can't know how to do everything.
Exactly.
And that's not right. You need people to help.
Exactly.
And having that right, you know, crew or team or whoever it is that can come in and help and take on different aspects that mm-hmm. they have strong suits in, that's incredible.
That's wonderful.
It's an amazing thing.
I love them all so much. We wouldn't be able to
them. I mean, it takes a group, you know? I mean, it's the team, you know, teamwork makes the dream work.
Exactly.
That's a legit expression.
Yes.
So
yes.
It's very valid. But you touched on the magazine. When did you guys, what is the magazine called?
The magazine is called Awaken Voices, and the blog is called The Nightingale, which actually just launched, I want to say, like a couple months ago.
The Nightingale.
Yeah. So that's like for shorter pieces that publish more often.
Okay. So when did the magazine start?
I think in 2016.
Okay.
It was very small at first. We actually had to seek out a lot of the writers to publish pieces.
Uh-huh.
And then we switched our submission software, and now it's just, it's grown so much, and people are submitting so much more work.
How often does a new one come out?
Every couple months, I would say.
Okay.
More often than the art exhibits, definitely.
Oh, wow. But that's such, I mean, like, look at how you guys have grown. Like, what an amazing thing, like, through
and
writing to have a magazine.
I take almost no credit with that as a person. I remember when we were first starting this, it was me and Jean just sitting, reading through all these submissions by ourselves and making it work. And then Jerry came on board, and she actually has a literary background, is in grad school for writing as well. So
beautiful.
She kind of took it and just turned it into this beautiful piece of work. And what's really exciting, too, is that it's not only just the literary magazine, we're also publishing the blog now.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to that, people had been sending us books, like literal books. And we were like, God, it would be so great if we could do something with this, but it wouldn't pay the respect to the work if we just kind of threw it online.
Right.
So we've actually been serializing longer works. And we started as the first one we did was Jean's book, which is actually a published book about her relationship with her cousin Judith. And it's her correspondence and their letters back and forth before Judith died.
Okay.
And that was our first round. And now we're in the, we're doing our second book, who actually happens to be written by, an artist who's exhibiting artwork in the gallery right now. So
oh, wow. Look at that, how that
it
ties
is.
In.
That's another thing that's been happening, naturally, but intentionally,
yes.
to have some of our programming talk to each other way
uh-huh.
more, so that, you know, the art and the writing and the music are all interwoven and people can
Understand it more. And exactly. they feel like they really, like, you know this person or the journey, or but it all connects, yes. which I think is great, and exactly. to see it on from so many different facets.
Exactly. Yes.
So you guys, you do have musical performances?
We do. So we have a concert series called Songs of Survival. I believe we have done 4, and we will be our 5th one will be in May. Mm-hmm. Those is all. It also works by submission process. So singer songwriters, also spoken word poets, composers, any kind of musical. Or performance. We've actually had
cover everything.
Dance. Oh yeah, we're not everything yet. We're trying.
Yeah.
We're trying. So they can submit, and we actually work with a wonderful music producer, Cassandra Kazor, mm-hmm. who helps sort of curate the night. And a lot of times we'll have someone who submits poetry, and we'll pair them up with someone who is a music composer and have them perform together.
Wow.
Those events, I will honestly say, are some of our most emotional, mm-hmm. Just because seeing someone perform about their experience as a survivor is so heightened, and it's so special.
That just gives me like goosebumps.
Oh, you should come. They're really wonderful.
I would love to.
That actually is the only event I think we have that costs money. Mm-hmm. We have just a small entrance fee. It's so that we can actually pay the performers.
Yeah.
Which is so important to us, because we are not currently capable of paying the writers or the artists that we display and publish, but musical performances, we do try to give them, and I mean, it's a really small stipend, but just to make them feel like their work is worth
right.
something.
Exactly.
And there's always a Q&A after the performance where the audience can kind of ask about the performer's process and the impact it had
wow.
on their healing. And my heart just bursts thinking, because each event has been so different, because uh-huh. the performers have been so different, but they have all been so emotional in the
wow,
most wonderful
I can
way.
That.
Oh, they're great. They're
no, I'll definitely have to. I'll have to come to the next
yeah.
one. How often? So every night. I know you guys. The gallery is open during the day,
mm-hmm.
but do you have? Is that when the workshops go on and the events, or are those usually at night?
The workshops and events are usually at night. We've had a few daytime workshops for specific groups of people, mm-hmm. and we are looking into offering more daytime programming just based on the need, because we know, you know, it's harder for some people with kids, you know, to come to an evening workshop or an event or something like that. So we've been trying yeah. to add daytime
expanding
stuff.
You guys are
yeah.
like you said, it's growing, which is great.
Yes.
But through that grant writing and that fundraising, that's
know.
You know, you guys get a bigger space and bring more programs
exactly.
and more staff.
And more staff. And I think more staff is the big need. We have 2 full-time employees and 2 part-time employees. The 2 part-time are pretty new, actually, which mm-hmm. is super exciting. And then we have a really wonderful internship program to help with the literary magazine and the art programming
oh, wow.
specifically,
okay.
which is fun. And we also have 2 interns from Adler University,
uh-huh.
Where they are master's students for in the art therapy program, and they have to fulfill like a social justice practicum for their first year. So we have them, which
that's
we
perfect.
Love them. They're great.
Is there anybody specifically that you're looking for right now, or a certain type of volunteer that we can kind of help spread?
Oh man,
spread the word.
Volunteer. Honestly, if you are listening to this and you have any idea or skill set you think we could use, please contact us. Honestly, the graphic design thing has been a huge challenge, just because the more events we have, the more marketing collateral we have to make, and it's so hard for
yes.
us to keep up with because we don't have a designer in house. And I know that's something that does take up a lot of time. So even if we do have one, you know, one volunteer who we know can do this, we don't want to over ask and you know, basically.
So any of the graphic designers out there, if you're listening,
yes.
you need to contact Laura at Awakenings.
Yes,
and,
or website people.
Or website people. Hey, this is the place. Put
yes,
it out there.
Gosh,
you know, you never
help.
Know.
We are, I will not say this for our whole staff. I am a tech dinosaur.
Uh-huh.
I thought I was tech savvy until I started, you know, working with all of our like IT support guys. And then I was like,
and then you're like, what?
Oh,
I have no idea.
You are absolutely speaking a different language. And I just blindly trust them to fix things. But our website is actually beautiful and was donated.
It
by,
is. I was on there. It's,
oh,
it's great.
You.
I went on there
it.
To do
and,
my research.
And the whole thing was donated by, all like a female owned web design company called Scout Design. I'll give them a little shout out. They're wonderful.
Absolutely.
But we've also kind of been growing, you know, like we keep putting more and more stuff on the website, and we recognize that it's almost like the space thing. It's the same thing. Like we mm-hmm. know we've outgrown what we have, but we still got to work with what we got. So
yes,
lots of challenges, but good challenges.
Well, that's great. And I hope that, you know, this just continues to grow, because you guys are doing some amazing work, and being able to, you know, shine that light on the stories of survivors and help with their healing in any way possible is something that's amazing. And I know anybody out there who would want to volunteer and be able to help and be a part of it, you know, contact Laura, go check out Awakening, support in any way that you can.
Or just come visit.
And honestly, come visit. Right. I mean, but just to tap into that world and those emotions and to understand that, I mean, I think that has to be just, you know, a beautiful thing to kind of witness.
Yeah. I mean, I our founder says this a lot. I don't think anyone walks out of the gallery the same person they were when they walked in.
Absolutely.
In the best
not.
Way.
You yeah. know,
you're learning something about the way the world works and supporting
right.
people who have been through something that maybe you haven't or maybe you have.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, wow. Well, where can people find you? I know your website, it's awakeningsart.org.
Yes. Yeah, so this is pretty easy. I think on almost all social media, our handle is awakeningsart. So Instagram and Twitter are both that. I think Facebook is Awakenings Art Chicago. We're pretty active on social media. That's really the fastest place to get news about new events, open calls for art or a magazine or a performance, anything like that. So please follow us and share stuff. That's honestly, as such a, we're so small, even just sharing a post helps so much because that's how we get, we know that's how we reach more
yeah,
survivors, honestly.
Right, exactly. So. Exactly. Word of mouth,
yes.
You know, spreading that healing. And it's 4001 North Ravenswood Avenue.
Yes,
right?
And Chicago. We're on the second floor, so you'll have to dial up to us, but we will buzz you in.
Okay, awesome. And any events that are coming up in the near future, big events or gallery openings that you
yes,
want to talk about?
We have a new exhibit opening on March 15th. As of right now,
mm-hmm.
We do not have a title for it, but we are very excited about it, and hopefully by the time this releases, there will be a title.
Yes.
And so
then
check back.
They can check back on social media and find that out.
Totally.
I just want to thank you again so much for
the
work that you guys are doing and for being able to come on and tell us about it and share some of the stories and the education. And, you know, I think it's such an important thing that you guys are doing. So thank you.
Thank
so
you for
much.
Having me and helping us spread the word.
Absolutely. And I'm definitely going to come out and visit.
Yes.
I absolutely will.
Good.
That's one of the, you know, most amazing things, and I'm so grateful to be able to have this opportunity of the podcast, but just the people that I have met, it's you know, it's this connection that it's incredible, and
it's
I'm
like
so
you can become
grateful
a dot
for that
connector.
Yeah, you know, absolutely, I love connecting other people, and I love, you know, I think one of the most important thing is relationships in your life,
mm-hmm.
and that's worth more than anything.
Yes.
So being able to meet such, you know, beautiful, amazing people like yourself,
aww,
that's kind
you.
Of what it's all about. So thank
getting
you again. I know. It is. When you think about it, I get so sappy about it, but
no,
it's true.
Right.
It's like all these, you know, people doing amazing things to try and make an impact in the world and to create change. That's incredible.
Well, and it's funny because I was so excited to come down here today and I was like, man, it feels so good that someone wants to hear about this. You know, that it is really special
course.
What you're doing too, because you're connecting people to things that, you know, they might be able to use. And I just, it's wonderful. So thank you for having me.
Of course. Thank you. And any of you guests out there, or audience, I should say, any tips or questions or tools that you want to hear either from today's podcast or any other episode that you want me to have kind of discussed, please feel free to reach out. You can message me at my Facebook page, Getting Zen with Gen Z, and I look forward to talking to you guys next week. Thanks. Bye.